Welcome to another episode of Turning the Table, sponsored by Benchmark 60. Turning the Table is the most progressive weekly videocast for today's food and beverage industry, featuring staff-centric operating solutions for restaurants and the hashtag New Hospitality Culture. My name is Adam Lamb, and I'm a career coach for chefs and hospitality professionals at cheflifecoaching.com. And we have our co-host, Jim Taylor of Benchmark 60, here with us. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Adam. How are you?
Great. And yourself, sir?
Couldn't be better. Thanks.
Fantastic start to 2023. This is episode 125, The Three Things You Need to Know About Senior Living. And we have Aaron Fish, who's a hospitality executive consultant to the senior living industry. He's also has a company called Trestle Hospitality Concepts, and he also is a podcaster. And the name of that is Tips from Trestle's Senior Living Hospitality Podcast. You'll want to stick around because Jim and I will reveal the top three things about senior living and why it could be a viable market for you to actually to be employed in. And this Lunchbox live stream is broadcast every week on Thursday at 12 noon on Turning the Table podcast page on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Chef Life Coach page on Facebook. You can catch the podcast version everywhere you get your podcasts in about 2 days. And we ask that you share the show with someone you care about who can find this information useful and leave a review. And as always, links to the videos and other things discussed in the show can be found in the comments and the show notes. So bring on Aaron. Aaron, how are you? Welcome.
Good. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing great. And Aaron, I'm hopefully, you know, we can enroll you in a temperature check. So we like to start every show with, we want to start every show with a methodology that was devised by chow.org, which is out of Denver, Colorado, and soon to be nationwide. So they start every meeting with this rating as a way of kind of gauging where we are emotionally. Because I don't know about you, Aaron, but every time I would ask somebody else, hey, how you doing? Oh, I'm great. Great. Thanks. No. How are you really? So, Aaron, why don't you go first? Which most applies to where you're at right now emotionally?
You know, I'm probably maybe like medium well. Pretty, you know, things are going well on my end. Just, you know, coming out of the new year and, you know, as a solopreneur right now, I'm kind of feeling the pressure of having taken a little bit of time to myself over the holidays. And so just trying to get back on track and a little bit of stress with that. But I think I've categorized it as good stress. So just trying to wrap my arms around it and get ready for the new year.
Totally get it. Jim, how about you?
I feel like I kind of say the same thing almost every week. I'm usually kind of operating somewhere in the medium rare thing, but I'm feeling pretty good. I've got an interesting thing to share after we hear where you're at, Adam.
Sure.
It kind of came up last week around this concept.
So yeah, I would say that I'm probably somewhere around medium well. Currently, I'm feeling some anxiety and pressure around some financial stuff. You know, to Aaron's point, yeah, it took a little bit of time off during the holidays, and there seems to be kind of, I don't know, an expectation that I should be doing more right now in order to catch up. And so that's causing a little anxiety. But generally speaking, you know, I'm definitely present. And I'm amused and glad, you know, to be here with you guys. So thanks very much for asking. And if anybody's interested in getting a copy of that, all they have to do is DM us. I'll be more than happy to share that that wonderful asset that Chow has developed. So, Jimmy, you had an observation or some feedback?
You know, we've been doing this every week for a little while now. And through the holidays, you know, as I'm sure lots of people do, you see people you haven't seen in a long time, right? You're at a thing on Christmas Eve or a family event on Boxing Day or whatever it might be, right?
And, sure.
And my family happened to be at both of those things, right? One on Christmas Eve, one on Boxing Day, with some of the same people. And there was a guy that's you know, related to the family that I've actually never met before. And I meet this guy on Christmas Eve, and I'm like, hey, how you doing? And he's like, awful. And this is my first impression of the guy, right?
Wow.
Right.
And anyways, I was kind of taken aback. We just ended up having a little chat and kind of go on. And my wife and I ended up talking about it that night that I was like, I met this guy and he said he was awful. She goes, yeah, he said the same thing to me. Anyway, 2 days later, we get to the Boxing Day thing and same guy's there. And I'm like, hey, how you doing? He's like, terrible. Oh. And, you know, it was really interesting. At first, I actually was, like I said, I was kind of taken aback by it. But then I found myself thinking about the fact that we've been doing this every week. And and there needs to be some, I think, normalization of the fact that it's okay to tell people if things aren't good.
Right.
Because everyone, like you said, we're sort of just conditioned to be like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm, you know, everything's great. And if it's not, it's not. I mean, then that's okay. So
right.
Anyway, I think next time I see him, which might not be for a year, who knows? We'll see how he is. But I'm definitely going to remember that we do this every week for a reason. And you know, if things are kind of rocky, that's okay.
Yeah, I guess the thing that we don't necessarily talk about a lot is, you know, how to respond if someone says, you know, I'm well, I'm burnt. Sure. You know, like, oh, that's great information. Like, at some point, there needs to be a recognition that, like, yes, I heard you, I see you, I value you. And then what do you do now?
Yeah.
And that's where organizations like Not 9 to 5, the Burnt Chef Project, and a few others come up, because they actually have free trainings to be mental health care advocates, so that, you know, you're not a counselor, you're not there to solve the problem, but you're adept at being able to read the tea leaves or the signs to be able to at least deal with it. Because I know for myself, most of my career, I probably most always ignored people when they were struggling. You know, I don't know what my internal dialogue might have been. Maybe they got there late, or they were hungover or whatever, and yeah, that you deserve it and kind of stuff. But, you know, knowing when I'm in my shit to be able to just say to somebody, yeah, I'm not feeling really great, and there's nothing really you can do about it, and it's just good to be able to speak about it.
Yeah, for me, it's owning it, right? Like, I have a hard time sometimes saying, I do feel like crap, and I need to get in my own headspace and figure out that it's okay to be like that. Cause I get super frustrated when I'm not where I want to be, or I'm not focused on the things I need to be focused on. And so, yeah, that for me is the big struggle, is how do I start to embrace it for myself? Then I can be better about it for other people.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. And, I appreciate that, because, you know, if that's kind of one of the reasons why we do this at the top of every show, because we want to model what that looks like for other people, you know, that it's okay to ask. You know, not to put a too fine a point on it, but, you know, the Burnt Chef Project kind of normalizes conversations about suicide. And it's okay to say, hey, listen, when's the last time you thought about suicide, or, you know, had negative thoughts about yourself? Be able to ask that within the context of what's going on. And I know that previously, you know, HR would probably say, yeah, you can't ask that. Because it puts, you know, whether they're considering liability or anything. And I've come to the conclusion that HR is a necessary. Yeah, they're more focused on compliance than, say, actually looking for solutions to the issues that are happening within the marketplace. And I don't want to paint a bad brush and get lots of hate mail from HR. Right. But to have that compliance is very, very important, because, again, like, there's some things that you can say and some things you can't, but how does that work when, you know, you're actually asking these deeper questions? Jim, do you have any feedback on that?
Well, yeah, I think it's just, you know, the more we can, especially in our industry where there's, you know, so many things going on all the time, the more we can normalize the discussion around how you're doing and the, you know, tools that are available for people if someone says not good. I mean,
yeah. This show, we're talking about senior living, and I was lucky enough to spend a couple of years at a senior living facility here in Asheville. And what struck me is they had one particular benefit in their benefits package, which kind of, I was like, wow, this is really great, which is they do this thing called an employee assistance program, which basically what they did is they contracted with a local counselor, and it becomes an anonymous service. So HR gets a bill, and that's all they know. They don't, there's no name or enough, but it's the phone number's there. If you're struggling, you can go make an appointment. And I referred at least three or four people that I can remember to that service, whether or not they took upon it themselves, but it was no cost to them. And typically in hospitality situations, you don't really see that type of benefit, which I think is one of the first things that we can talk about, which what's different between senior living and kind of on the street hospitality organizations, is the amount of effort they put towards benefit packages.
Yeah. Well, you know, they have to consider different, you know, walks of life other than just maybe what you might find in the hospitality sector, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're also dealing with nurses and, you know, maintenance staff and caregivers. And so it's a little bit more of a holistic, broader, you know, stroke, if you will, when they think about that. And so, you know, I was kind of surprised too when I first got into senior living that that was a focus. You know, they had that as a benefit when I started, and this was years ago. You know, and it was nice to have. And there were times when, you know, I was able to refer somebody and say, hey, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what your issues is, but here's the number. Just call it. It's just part of your package. And
right.
I do think we could do a better job of emphasizing it maybe in the industry, but, you know, it's there. It's available. A lot of operators do it. And so, you know, I'm really glad. And hopefully, you know, with more and more awareness about the value of something like that. And it's not a high cost benefit, really.
No.
Think about it. So hopefully operators will start seeing it and taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Aaron, just
go ahead. Because
you know, I think we were discussing this before we jumped on that. Of the three of us, I'm the one who hasn't worked directly in senior living. Is that like a, you know, having a benefit like that, that robust benefits package, is that commonplace in like across the industry, or is this just something that the leaders in the industry do?
You know, it, something like that's pretty common. I will say that there are, you know, when we look at total benefits packages, there are definitely opportunities in senior living and those operators, just like there are in other organizations. I do believe they, one of the things the industry does well is they look for ways to provide benefits, provide services to employees that maybe aren't as high cost as, right, you know, the healthcare insurance is always a struggle for any business. And so being able to kind of tack on these kinds of incentives, these benefits that'll draw employees in, is a winner for them, generally speaking.
Yeah. Now, I just want to quickly jump in because in my career, I spent, you know, the majority of it in the back of the house. And I was working at a small Italian restaurant. My sous chef turned to me as he was cooking pasta. He's like, yeah, I'm out of here. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm going to go work in healthcare. I'm like, what? Like, for chefs on the street, so to speak, I would say that there was a time when working in a hotel or working in healthcare kind of made you less than, right? Like, like somehow you're taking it soft. And I remember having that same kind of like, healthcare, what the hell is he talking about, healthcare? Like, I didn't have any idea of what he was talking about until I was in the industry. And then I thought, geez, why didn't I know about this years ago? I mean, the latest the restaurant was open at 7 o'clock, you know, you can get home at a reasonable hour. And there's, you know, several other attributes. But the one thing that I noticed myself was coming from a commercial restaurant, I experienced this sort of mania about making sure that every single plate was correct going out, because God forbid someone has a bad experience, it's not only them, but it's the 10 people they tell. So there's this hypervigilance that happens. And when I took that to the retirement community and I was running around for about the first 10 days, and everybody just sat there and just chuckled at me like, ha, ha, ha. But then my direct report said, Adam, you got to understand, you know, there's 650 people here that are completely engaged in your success, and you get to see them every day. And, you know, there's a mindset or an energy for me, what happened. And so it's, I just position to being so focused on success, and now it's more like I got to relax a little bit and wrap my arms around the team. Does that string a bell for you?
Yeah, you know, when I transitioned into senior living, it was, gosh, almost 20 years ago, and I was coming from a hotel, so I was used to that 70-hour grind. You know, maybe I got Monday afternoons off, kind of thing. When I got into senior living, I was kind of taken aback. I was like, oh, I can work a 50-hour work week and I can have weekends off. So, you know, one of the things you talked about was the residents, right? And the expectations around them. You know, I feel like if it's an extreme on either ends with them, right? Like if you are hyper vigilant and focused on having a great plate and great food and serving them, they are going to go out of their way to commend you, to give you the accolades, to really kind of boost that ego, if you will, to continue to do.
Sure.
But if you are on the back end, if you get into that setting, you go, oh, well, it's, I can take a step back. Like, these guys are here every day, so they'll just get used to it. They will crucify you. They have zero qualms about it because they're just like, look, we're paying a significant amount to be here every month. And the expectation is that you're a chef or you're a professional. You're going to do this way. And that's what we expect. So, you know, I think for me, that was probably a big eye opener too, because I maybe kind of got into that mindset of, oh, well, yeah, it's healthcare. We don't have to do all the same things. Mm-hmm. I quickly realized that's not the case. No. So I feel like that's part of the reason I've been so successful, is I just quickly shifted that mindset from, okay, it's not really healthcare. It's hospitality with a little bit of healthcare dabbled in there, right? Like, you got to do some stuff for a few residents. You got to take care of some diets and those kinds of things. But generally speaking, it's pretty similar.
I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that I didn't count on, so I went to this place as a consultant first, and I spent like 7 to 10 days. What I didn't count on was how quickly I could fall in love with the residents.
Yeah.
I know it sounds crazy, but when you see the same person day after day after day, it's so easy to build this really wonderful relationship and have a great deal of desire and concern for their welfare. You know, it's like, and I think that's, again, one of these really huge differences, is like, regular restaurant, you might see this person on special occasion, a birthday, or once every 6 weeks, but when you're seeing somebody every day, it's hard not to fall in love with them, I guess.
Yeah, it makes me think of the first resident that kind of skewered me, right? He was, he had worked at the American Institute of Baking and was a professional baker, and so he was meticulous about the desserts we served and all of that. We had this argument about lemon bars. He told me you couldn't, a lemon bar wasn't a thing. You couldn't make a good one. But what I realized was, yeah, he was complaining about that one item, but that wasn't the entirety of his complaints, right? He had some other things going on. And once I got to know him, got to understand it, it was, you know, that relationship was built. And I would say, you know, after about 18 months of working with him and talking to him and visiting with him, I got to know him really well. And he became one of the biggest advocates for what we were doing.
Yep.
And it was all about building that relationship. And I, you know, that's when I talk to people who are thinking about coming into senior living, or, you know, they don't understand what I do. I just explain to them. I feel like it's a really simple explanation of what you do in the hospitality restaurant sector is transactional, and what we do in senior living is relational, you know. And if you can change your mindset around that's how you handle customers and customer service, you can be super successful in this industry.
You said relational and versus
transactional. Yep.
Jim.
Interesting. So what do you think was there something that happened or something along the way that made you sort of realize that differently? How long did it take you to kind of figure that out? Because that's the first time I've ever heard that.
You know, it was probably a couple of years, right? Because when I got into senior living, I walked into a situation where they had just transitioned out of a contract management situation, very healthcare oriented. They had hired a director to start that transition, but it was still very institutional in her mindset. And so I came in and I was having a hard time like grappling with all that. Fast forward 14 months after I started, I'm now the acting director of the department. And I just start thinking like, we're doing this all wrong, right? I just go back to my hospitality roots and all that training. And I go, we gotta do it this way. And there was a lot of pushback from residents and all the changes we were making. And that's when I started having conversations and starting to explain, well, this is why, right? Yeah. The biggest like aha moment for me was having a conversation and convincing a resident that the dining room, which I always now refer to as the restaurant, is not part of their home, right? It's an amenity that they get as part of their living there.
Correct.
And so It's hard to do that though when somebody's sold, hey, this is your home, everything is your home, this is part of your home, we've got this great dining room. Right. And it made me realize that if you don't build those relationships with those people you're serving, because they're there 24/7,
right,
you know, you're going to fail. If you just treat it like another transaction, you're going to constantly get hit upside the head with complaints and issues and satisfaction concerns. And so it probably took me a good two and a half years to realize that as I was working through all of it. But once I got my arms around it and realized that, you know, getting to know people, you know, using their names and understanding what their likes and preferences are, and then managing that, made a huge difference. And, you know, getting them to help you as well, right? Like, that was one of the other things, was I created an actual committee of residents, and they were a focus group, a sounding board. I mean, by the time I left that first senior living operation, 8 years later, like, they were doing my satisfaction surveys. I had them speaking on my behalf. I mean, and it was all because I built those relationships. And so it's hard to do when you don't have that consistent customer base over and over. If you're just transactional, it's not going to happen.
True. Cassandra is asking, I try to get information on ways that I can help things suck less, making it a point that the person has seen and heard, then work on solutions that I can provide or escalate to the proper channels. Absolutely, Cassandra. So one of the things that I ran into was most people who work at a senior living facility most often have been there for a while. The place where I went to work, we had folks that had been there 20 years, 30 years, 10 years. And so they get used to a certain way of things being done. Yeah. And in order to shift that, as I was working on bringing in a new culture to the department, I realized that like doing a PowerPoint presentation to the entire staff doesn't really change anything, right? It's always elbow to elbow. And one of the things that I didn't realize is that I didn't actually bring everybody together to create that culture. I brought the culture in and said, this is the way it's going to be. So things would have been much, much different if I had brought everybody in and say, okay, so what are the things that we can agree on? What are the values that we can all, you know, aspire to? And instead of me thinking it's a great idea, having it be a cooperative experience. And I think a lot of managers might be scared of making it a cooperative experience because, you know, you hear the things like, too many cooks spoil the broth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, it came down to establishing clear guidelines around job classifications, job rates, a career trajectory through the facility that people could actually see and monitor, and having lots of small, robust orientation day. Shifted a lot of things for a lot of the folks that were there, including the ones that were there, because we had to do that with everybody once. And then as folks come in, Aaron, that caught your breath there for a second.
Yeah, no, what I was going to add was, you know, for me, it's about explaining the why, right? Mm. And, you know, you get into the grind of working in a kitchen or providing service, and it's, you know, it seems like it's just wash, rinse, repeat. Like, we're just doing this over and over and over. But if you explain the why to them, you know, one of the things that early on I struggled with in that first operation was the budget, right? It was different for me because, you know, you go from like managing a food cost percentage to now you're managing a dollar per resident. And so I had to wrap my head around how to do that. And so one day I finally just had it. And so I just explained to the staff, I used fried shrimp as an example. I was like, look, if you guys do one too many pieces of shrimp when we do this service and we provide over the menu, I just did the math and I walked them through it in pre-service. It's like, it's $60,000.
Yep.
I was like, how much more staff could I bring on to help you when you say we're understaffed, to help you out if you guys would just do this? Mm-hmm. And so getting them to understand that why and taking some of the things that maybe you're already doing and sharing it, it kind of helps with creating the culture you're talking about.
Couldn't agree more, Aaron. Another thing was making sure that there was a daily shift meeting, and that shift meeting could look like anything. You know, I use that as an opportunity to talk about how food cost is calculated, how labor cost is calculated. A lot of these things that I think we take for granted that someone else knows, and really kind of bringing everybody underneath the tent. So like, okay, so this is what the budget looks like, guys. I just want to be very clear, and so that you know where all these numbers are coming from. like to your point, Aaron, absolutely. The why is the most important. Cassandra, you might be able to use this. Like, people don't want to be told what to do. They want to actually be enrolled in the why. Folks really, really respond to the narrative. So if the narrative is we're working towards making this a world-class facility, then that means everybody's involved in that particular pursuit, whether it's someone mopping the floor or someone working line or someone in the front of office. We're all working towards the same thing. So to be able to enroll them in that narrative is a really powerful way to get things to probably suck less in your course, right?
Yeah, definitely. What the types of people are, is there like an avatar or, you know, a specific type of person that succeeds in senior living or in that sort of
great
part
question.
Of the industry? Because there's, I mean, we all know this, it's no secret right now that there's lots of people trying to figure out if hospitality is in their future or not. And, you know, what's your suggestion to someone who's thinking about that? That is senior living a viable career? Is it a good option? Is it, you know, I'm curious about what your take on that is.
You know, I would say if you were looking at it 15 years ago, I could see there was a huge gap from what you're doing in a restaurant to what you might be doing in a standard, typical operator, right? But now, I mean, we're in this weird, great transition of demographics for senior living, right? Like 15 years ago, we were dealing with silent generation residents who just give me what I'm paying for. I'm not going to complain. Like, this is fine. But now we're starting to deal with the baby boomers who are just at that age where they're looking, getting interested. And so the expectation is they want that style of service. They want options. They want to have flexibility. And so if you're a chef now, I don't think there's a better time, honestly, to be looking at moving to senior living. You know, there are operators that are literally designing and developing restaurants that are attached to senior living communities that literally are going to be open to the public. You know, we were talking before the show started about there's this location in Austin. It's a community. And I talked to them on my podcast about this. They are working with Chef Stephen Piles to open a restaurant that's going to be open to the public, right? The demographics are a little bit older in that neighborhood. But we talked about how many rooftops are in the neighborhood. They're like 15,000. So it's a big, big opportunity. And so it's accessible to those residents. And now, you know, after they kind of get up and running, they're going to open it to the public. I mean, they're going to be on Open Table and you can go and have dinner there. So those are the kinds of things that are starting to happen in this industry. That shift is happening. And so, you know, I don't look for chefs and hospitality professionals when I'm helping clients hire that I have 20 years of senior living experience. I'm looking for someone who has hospitality experience, understands all of that. We can always teach them the healthcare aspects, you know, if that's needed. And so, you know, it's that personality and what are you really looking for in that lifestyle and even that kind of like, your mental makeup of what is my day in, day out look like.
Correct.
Sounds like some really cool hybrid opportunities kind of on the horizon, if not there already.
Absolutely. You know, in areas like Charlotte, Raleigh, here in North Carolina, in a lot of major markets, there are some senior living communities that are, I mean, their burn rate on their money is like incredible because they're building these facilities for, it's like an arms race, putting in the most fantastic food and beverage operations and spas and things of this sort. So now they're the equivalent to any country club or resort that you might go to. And they're looking for those amenities to be the same way. You know, typically they're a little bit tighter on labor because of the operating paradigm. Typically there's some type of buffet, et cetera, an all day event. But aside from that, you can see cuisine that parallels any restaurant on your downtown street. And to be able to take that and almost deconstruct those meals so that they're healthy for the residents is also a great challenge. I mean, there's not a lot of people out there who can do that well and still have that food like present in the same manner.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely opportunity for, you know, chefs that want to come in and be challenged at their craft. I think that sometimes is one of the other pieces of the puzzle that gets overlooked, right? I think you may have mentioned it earlier, Adam, where it's like, oh, well, when you transition to healthcare or senior living, like it's okay. I can take my foot off the gas. It's going to be easy. It's not, right? The expectation is that you're competing with the restaurants in the neighborhood, right? Because those residents, while some of them can't always get out and always go there, you know, the family members are coming in and they're comparing what you're doing to what's down the street. And so you've got to have that opportunity exists for those coming from traditional restaurants and hotels to do the same thing in senior living.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting. Yeah. So Aaron, I know that you have a webinar coming up pretty soon, right? That's 2023 Trends and Innovations in Senior Living Hospitality.
Yeah.
What's the date on that?
If you mind saying, it's actually next Thursday, 3 p.m. next. Central.
Great. So we put it in the chat, and also the link to register. If you're not in the healthcare trade or in senior living, this is a great opportunity to kind of like look over someone's shoulder and see if maybe that's for you. And Aaron, you made a great point. Like during COVID, there were a lot of people who left the industry, some of their own volition, some not, and then probably considered like how to come back into the industry, and maybe they don't want to go back to full service restaurants quite yet because of whatever reason. But it seems to me that senior living is a great transitional piece for that, especially if you have a family. Yeah. I had an executive chef who seemed to be kind of off a little bit, like things weren't going the right way, and he and I had a couple discussions, and then finally he just blurted it out. He's like, you know, I want to be home to tuck my kids into bed every night.
Yeah.
And I realized that for him, that was his motivator. So then it was up to me to be able to create a position or situation in which he could actually do that. And I didn't give it enough credit when I just said, hey, man, you want to be the executive chef? I'm like, you got the all skills, you know, almost like trying to goad him into taking this. Yeah. Because he seemed like the next natural one. Jim, you and I have talked about this a lot, about throwing the keys to somebody and never really taking the time to ask, like, what's most important for you? So
yeah, definitely. You know, that's one of the things that I really early on caught on to was that quality of life kind of thinking. But I think that there was a big struggle for us to try and attract the right talent in hospitality over to senior living pre-COVID, because people, they would hear the quality of life, but they're like, no, this is, if you're going to be in this position, you're going to grind. That's how you earn it, right? That's how you get where you want to be. But I think COVID happened, and one of the positives that came out of a horrible situation was people started thinking about what's really best for me long-term, you know, my mental health, my physical health, my family life, like looking at it big picture. You know, I was even very much like wrapped up in what's best for my career, right? Like I was literally like the guy that what's next rung on the ladder, right? And I did that even in senior living. I was doing that, like that's how I got into my role as a senior VP was I want to be the next thing. And then living through COVID and kind of stepping back, you know, I kind of had that epiphany of I don't know that that's exactly the best thing for me and my family. And so you know, we started off talking about your temperature. I was roasted when COVID started, when I think about myself professionally. So, you know, the other nice thing about senior living, which I don't think people really know, is it's a pretty recession proof industry.
Oh yeah, man.
Okay. You know, everybody hates the R word.
Excellent point.
But, you know, there are people going gangbusters. They're looking at 2023 at being one of the like best years from a census standpoint, from development standpoint, from just investment, right, going into the industry.
Sure.
And it's just because people are getting older and the demand is there. Right. So, you know, if you want to get into an opportunity or a career where, yeah, you could ride it out for 10, 12, 15 more years, do the presentation and the creation and the things that chefs love to do, but maybe not the 80-hour grind, senior living might be the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. And sure, one
people listening right now that are going,
going on in my
well, you know, market here. Right. And you know, to be perfectly, you know, fair to the other side, you know, for service staff, it can also be a great viable living, although most places, you know, you're not going to get tipped. No. Right. So that's why the hourly wage sometimes be higher. And that's why they work so hard at making a really robust benefits package to kind of make up for that. Right. And the way it worked at the retirement community I worked at is right about September, all the residents would start their holiday drive and they would all throw in money. And at the end for Christmas, everybody who'd been there for a certain amount of time, staff members, got a Christmas bonus check that came directly from the residents, had nothing to do with the board. And, you know, that was no small change. I mean, yeah. It was in the hundreds of thousands, you know, at the end of the pot. And they do that year after year after year. And silly things like some residents used to work for the IRS. So they do free tax services for the associates. You know, there's all these weird things that are like ever seen in a regular hospitality organization, but somehow that just seems to fit within the senior living, because it also gives the residents an opportunity to feel alive and at cause and in contribution. So it's a wonderful symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. Well, and like Aaron said, it's a relational thing, right? I mean, you build a relationship with somebody who seems to be in the IRS and they're probably happy to do your taxes.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I just, for me, it comes back to, what is your real driver, right? If the real driver is, hey, I can be a server, I can work at one of these high-end restaurants and I can get $400-$600 a night and I can do that five nights a week, and that's what your drive is, then senior living is probably not going to be for you, right? But I promise you, you're going to eventually tire of that. You're going to want to dial back. And so the transition over to senior living can be smooth and easy, because the expectation and those skills and all the things you learned there are 100% transferable for sure.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So,
well, Aaron, I think you have the last word with that. Thank you so much for joining us here on Turning the Table. And don't forget, Aaron has a podcast as well. Aaron, what's the name?
Tips from Trestle. You can find it. We're actually launching season two next Tuesday. And we're really excited. We're actually, our first guest is David Page. He was the initial executive producer of Diners, Dive-Ins, and Drives.
Look at that. So,
super excited, talking a little bit of trends and his experience with senior living with his mother-in-law. And so it's going to be a very cool episode, and we're excited to get it started.
Oh, fantastic.
Congratulations, Aaron. Thank you so much for being on the show. Jim, any last thoughts?
I mean, the takeaway for me is that, you know, if there's a burnout level that's, you know, impacting people's, you know, decisions on how long to stay in the current role they're in hospitality, I mean, there's definitely opportunity in senior living.
Yeah.
So that's my takeaway. I mean, anyone who's listened to the show, I mean, it's going to cross their mind, I think so.
Right. And to any chefs who think that, you know, anybody working in senior living or healthcare is less than or doesn't work as hard as they do, yeah, go work a shift in their clogs and tell me if it ain't just as tough. And, you know, as it is right now, there's some senior living facilities, they get to play with all the good ingredients too. So thank you very much for joining us on this episode of Turning the Table. We'll see you next week, Thursday, 12 noon Eastern Time. Thanks very much, folks. Have a great week.